Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matthew Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. Good morning, Bob. Nice, on this Monday.
Nice voice, Matt.
Yeah, even as I was starting to say, I'm like, ugh. But I don't want to clear my voice into the mic, which is one of the worst things that broadcasters will do. Like, there's nothing worse. There's a cough button at the studio, and yet Landsberg's horrible for this. Just coughing into the mic. And just like, Michael, you realize people are listening to you.
Oh, he knows. Mm. So, lots of sports to get to. I'm really starting to get angry at the Leafs, and it's stupid, and maybe it's because I was drunk when I was watching, but
that's where we got to start. Okay. You apparently,
and Oscar talk.
And, oh, yeah, yeah. A lot of Oscar talk. Apparently, you were drunk over the weekend?
I was. So I got home Saturday from the gym. Mm-hmm. It was cold and dreary out.
Yeah.
And I have some goals for the summer mm-hmm. that I'm about to start training for in earnest. And you've done marathons. And you know,
yes.
like when you've mentally made the determination, I'm about to start training for event X now, you got to change your behaviors.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm about to do that. So you know what happens when you're on the threshold of healthy change?
Yeah, you have an unhealthy night. Totally. You get it all out of you.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm a Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
I can't help it. To me, it's Halloween and then All Saints Day.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, though. My wife doesn't drink red wine. Mm-hmm. And we didn't really have anything else because we're not a drinking family.
Yeah.
So I opened up this bottle. And I got halfway through, and I thought, well, I'm not going to waste it.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm not going to drink it tomorrow.
All right, I have questions. So you put back a bottle of red, and it hit you.
Yeah, it did.
And because, you know, A, you just said you came from a workout. You probably didn't carb load ahead of time.
No,
it's not like your body was filled with it. And it's been a while, so it's a sneak attack drunk is what you got.
Yeah.
Do you remember the wine?
It was called, like, it was something Spanish. It was bad.
Okay.
I wish you would have intervened.
Okay, so bad Spanish wine.
Yeah. I'll text you what it's called later today. We can critique it.
How long was this drinking? Like, over how many hours?
Well, it started around pregame. It started right after Ron McLean described Montreal as the cradle of sport.
Okay.
During the pregame for
awesome.
The hockey game. I'm like, well, that's it for me. I'm going to need a drink.
Was the game in Montreal? Or was it in Toronto?
No, it was in Montreal.
Okay.
It was in Montreal. So it was, it kind of peaked around the third period.
Okay.
Like,
so
maybe not peaked, but kicked in.
Yeah. But so it took you over 2 hours to drink the bottle.
It was going slow.
Okay. Yeah. You know what? You can do that, but it's been a while, so your body isn't used to putting back a bottle of wine.
As soon as it was done,
yeah,
started texting everybody.
How are you feeling on Sunday?
You know what? I was fine. I learned a trick. Mm-hmm. My personal trainer friend said that if you have Pedialyte before you go to bed, big help.
Oh, yeah.
And parents out there, Pedialyte's good for your kids' fevers, but it's also good for your debauched nights. Keep it on stock.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. The problem is sometimes if you drink too much, you forget to do those things.
Right.
You know, at the beginning of the night, you always start out with, I'm going to drink so much water, I'm going to regulate. And you do it early. But as the night goes on, it's like, oh, this is yummy. Oh, I'll get water later. And then you just forget about water. And then the next thing you know, it's the next morning.
Do you want to do Oscars or Leafs here? I kind of want to do Leafs just because
sure.
we're sort of there.
Sure.
Because I was so frustrated that they lost in overtime. And it's mm-hmm. not like they played badly, right?
They had one shot in the third period.
Yeah, but I mean, they didn't get their asses kicked.
No, they did not.
But it felt to me like they did. Because I keep waiting for them to like pull off the mask and say, ha-ha, we've been dormant all along.
Mm-hmm.
And you catch glimpses of it. Maybe they'll go on a little 5-6 game heater. But they never feel good for long.
No. Oh, no, it's the wild variances with them. Where they had those 5 or 6 games, but then they go through another stretch that looked bad. And the thing, the optimist can go, shame on you. They played back-to-back. They got 3 out of 4 points, and Jack Campbell looked fairly good. The other side is they almost lost to a horrible Ducks team who had played the night before and lost in overtime to Montreal on a Thursday, and yet the Leafs barely beat them. And then the third period, they had one shot on net against Montreal, and that's exactly why you can be upset with that team.
All right, so let's take it from the good side. Totally true. The mm-hmm. Jack Campbell thing seems to be a better than Michael Hutchinson thing.
That is true.
At least so far, over two games. It feels like Hutchinson would have lost one of those games in regulation. So they got points.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what they would need right now is points. So, okay, check. Feels like Kyle Clifford, everyone, how many articles have I read in the last 3 days about how this is an example of Dubas expanding his philosophy?
Yeah.
I think he just got a player.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's expanded his philosophy one iota.
But it is curious. Like, if you had said at the beginning of the year, is Kyle Clifford the sort of player that Dubas is going to reach out to? You'd probably go, probably not.
Yeah, and there was talk last year at the trade deadline they wanted Michael Ferland. So I don't think that this is like somehow Dubas has looked at his team and decided, I'm going to have to see it the way the fans do.
Bob, see, I'm going the other way. I think maybe Kyle Dubas, he's going 80s comedy here, where he was the nerd, and then suddenly he takes the magic jock potion, and mm-hmm. suddenly now he's the jock. You know, and then in the second act, he's winning the football games, and he's got the cheerleader. But then, near the end of the second act, he realizes he's lost who he is inside.
Okay, can we agree that the greatest nerd-to-cool-guy transformation is not Weird Science?
Okay.
It's actually Can't Buy Me Love, starring Patrick Dempsey.
Oh, absolutely.
That's the one.
100%.
You shit on my door.
Yeah.
When they
yeah.
throw the bag of shit at his old friend's door.
I
my heart broke.
Yep. Oh, yeah. And at that moment when he's like, oh, wait a minute. You know, I'm not who I am anymore. Even though the new version is getting a lot of sex and is partying. The old version was getting paid to ride on a lawnmower.
Right.
I don't know. Looking back, don't worry about throwing shit on your friend. You're in high school. You'll have plenty of friends in your 20s and 30s and 40s.
See, the genius of John Cusack, not to take this too far away from the Leafs, but the genius of John Cusack is in his movies, he never becomes cool.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone just eventually crosses over to him.
Yeah.
Better Off Dead yep. or Say Anything or whatever it is, you know, High Fidelity. Mm-hmm. Like, he never gets cool.
He never gets cool.
Somebody figures him out, though.
Yeah.
Isn't that the real nerd's dream?
Because mm-hmm.
you know deep down, even if you pull a Dubas, and you get Kyle Clifford.
Yeah.
It can't last.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Like right now, Kyle Dubas, I see him, you know, and he's giving wedgies to David Nill or, you know, whatever GM. But then he looks in the mirror one day, and he blows off going to, like, the Sloan Analytics Convention because he's got a kegger. And we're in the middle of that kegger party. Dubas realizes, this is not who I am. And he goes running out.
He starts hanging around Pete Chiarelli.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, any other, like, who's another ooh. Bozo GM?
Ooh, ooh. Hey, Kyle, how about instead of expected goals, expected gals? Ow! You know, and then they're at the party, the frat party.
So I like that line. So the Leafs on Saturday, you just knew when it went to overtime they were going to lose.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. I mean, you just know it's stupid and completely unscientific. Just felt like maybe better way to put it is you just knew it was going to overtime.
Mm-hmm.
That they were not going to be able to hang on that long playing the way they were playing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Tyson Barrie, just that long. Oh, my God.
I'm just fed up with that guy.
Yeah.
We talked about this last week about how that was Dubas' worst move.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that shot. It's funny. I was at a bar at Bay and Wellesley-ish area. It's called the Walrus. Both games were on. But the one that everyone was really into was the Raptor game. And we'll get into the Raptors in a little bit. But I found that interesting. There was like two Montreal fans who were chuckling it up when Montreal tied it. But then the staff and everyone was more watching the Raptor game.
Well, do you have anything you want to say about the Leafs? Because I feel like the only thing to say about the Leafs is the pressure's on.
Yeah.
They need points.
Mm-hmm.
Not having Nylander clearly doesn't help. But nope. With that kind of firepower, it shouldn't be that big a deal.
Yeah.
And the lack of shot generation was just weird.
Yeah.
After a while, it just gets weird. And they have no choice but to be better than they are. And if they're not, they won't make it.
There was an article, or I saw this stat about the narrative versus reality of the blown lead. And this was brought up after the Anaheim game. They're 21-2-2 when they go into the third period with a lead.
Mm-hmm.
So it's funny. That stat would destroy the idea that the Leafs are bad at holding on to a lead And yet it feels like the Leafs are really bad at holding on to a lead.
Yeah, well, that's a good stat because I feel like that puts my perspective in place. Maybe I'm wrong. I will say this, though.
I want to do more digging into that.
Whatever stats you want to come up with.
Yeah.
And, you know, I tend to lean towards analytics, so it's not like I'm anti-stat at all. But whatever stats you want to come up with doesn't change the fact that they're in tough to get a playoff spot. Like, it doesn't matter what number you roll out to prove that they're better than they really are.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're not.
Yeah.
Because the only number that matters is points, and they don't have lots of them.
It's process versus result. It's one of the classic debates of sports fans now. The underlying numbers look great. The expected goals are this or that. And then
we're going to have to call this the CC conundrum, going back to when Kyle Dubas said that. I can't understand how this guy's getting ripped.
And then everyone was like, we can. I don't know why you can't, but all of us here on the media side, we can fully see why.
Or the Ian Tulloch championing Freddie Gauthier having a great season last year when he had no goals. And Jeff O'Neill somehow shockingly saying, like, how is this possible?
Ian Chart.
He called him Ian Graff.
Ian Graff, that's it, not Chart, yeah.
So it could be that conundrum as well. Yeah. I like calling it the CC dilemma.
Yeah. Also because that's your daughter's nickname.
Yeah, that's a good point. Although I would like the CC dilemma to be, man, why does this kid do so much homework?
Mm-hmm.
Why can't she just stop doing homework?
Is that the problem?
It isn't so far.
No. How's when is her school on strike? Like what?
I think she's there all week.
Yeah.
Try the veal. And yeah, I like the strike days.
Mm-hmm.
But because my schedule is flexible.
Yeah, yeah. It's not as impactful on you.
If I know ahead of time, then I can move my week around so that I have, you know, I can do it, right? Mm-hmm. And then we just get a daddy-daughter day, which is awesome.
Yeah.
I like it. You know, keep going, teachers.
Did you ever entertain the thought of doing lesson plans or things for?
Oh, I have done that.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah, we had homeschool. No, she readily admits, like, she learns way more at homeschool, but there's more yelling.
Yeah. Because I remember the only strike I was ever involved in was like 1986. It was 86, 87. And the school, it was like for a whole week. It was great. And the first couple days, my folks, they tried. Like they had National Geographic videos for us to watch and we had to write about it. And all my friends were just riding their bikes all day. And we were just so miserable and angry. And then we finally, I think both parties decided to quit the charade
I don't like you, and you don't like me.
Yeah, and I mean, I was in grade like 7. So, you know, in Etobicoke, all we did is, you know, we were the classic. Just, you go out during the day, you come in at night. And
you were the kids from Stranger Things.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Like, we would drink water from a hose, and we'd be on bikes. It was great.
Yeah. So. All right, so let's talk Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get into any of the individual awards, overall thoughts?
I still miss, a host.
Mm-hmm.
The opening number was really talented, but I prefer, and this is just me, I prefer more of a focus on movies, like where there is the movie montages. Mm-hmm. And I thought they did good montages for all the major awards. They did a really nice job there, so I like that. But the opening, it was both impressive, but it didn't feel like it fit in. It wasn't enough about film. So
it
that kind of
feel maybe a little different, and I agree with you. Maybe a little different if Janelle Monáe was more of an actress, was a greater presence in Hollywood.
Like, yeah,
there's a lot of people there who can do that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
sing, dance, all that sort of thing.
Yeah,
not like they used to, but still, there's people who can do the triple threat thing, and maybe if one of them had done it,
yeah,
it would feel more movie centric.
And I just need a little more video accompaniment. You know, I mean, she was great, but I'm like, this feels like something maybe more at the Grammys than at the Oscars.
Yeah, totally. And then when Chris Rock and Steve Martin came out to not host.
Yeah. They were great. And then, you know, also was hilarious was Kristen Wiig.
And Maya Rudolph.
And Maya Rudolph. They were great as well.
They were so good.
And then, so I'm watching that and Chris Rock and Steve Martin. I'm like, could we have some of that throughout the show? Could we have the host, the people with the comedic chops? Like, if Steve Martin, Chris Rock, Maya Rudolph, or Kristen Wiig, if any one of those four was the host, I would have been like, fantastic.
I got to take care of something. You talk to Jeff Pollock and Seat Giant.
Yeah.
And I will be right back.
All right. I don't know where Bob's going. Just to let the audience know, Bob just suddenly got up. Oh, he probably has to take a tinkle or something. I won't take the mic into the bathroom. So anyway, hey, everyone. How you doing? Let me talk real quick about our sponsors. I haven't mentioned one. I apologize. A shout out to Seat Giant. If you're looking for tickets for any sort of thing, concert, sporting event, go to seatgiant.ca. They're our Canadian partner on this show. And all the dollars are in Canadian dollars. It's not like when you go to Ticketmaster or one of those other sites. You're like, oh my God, it's only $43. Oh wait, it's an American. Damn it. And then damn you, Canadian dollar. And damn you, Justin Trudeau, and all that sort of things. But go to use the discount code Bob and Matt at seatgiant.ca. You'll save some money. We get a little bit of a kickback, which is great because podcast, it ain't free. And then, of course, you know him, you love him, Jeff Pollock. He is our lawyer on this podcast. So he's our sponsor and he's our lawyer. Like, he legitimately takes care of all of our law stuff, like our wills, which he did ages ago. Litigation, states, trust, corporate, commercial, real estate law, whatever you want. Jeff Pollock, and it's jeffpollock.com, Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com is the website. Phone number 416-777-0088. The number again, 416-777-0088. And for people that get intimidated or nervous about the law and you don't know much about it and you don't know any lawyers, he is the opposite of whatever stereotype you have of a bad lawyer. He will treat you well. It is a family-run organization. Now, we're going to get into the Oscars. And what I'm curious about with Bob is how many of the films did he see? I got to see all of them with the exception of Marriage Story. But again, I don't have kids. It is far easier for me to see film than it is someone like Bob because you got kids. It's like my own twin brother. He used to see all the movies. Now he's got two kids. Guess what? He doesn't get to see all the nominated films. So we're going to get into that with Bob. And we're back. Bob, do you want to talk at all about the pause or do we just move on?
Nah, we'll just move on.
So the Oscars, how many of them were you able to see?
Of the movies?
Yeah.
Oh, just two.
Just two. Which two did you see?
I saw Joker and I saw Parasite.
Okay. So, oh, good. So you saw the Oscar-winning movie.
I did, and I quite liked it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm prepared to say it was the masterpiece everyone said it was.
It was. I'd like
to watch it again. I usually like to watch a good movie two or three times before I have a real opinion. Mm-hmm. You always miss stuff.
You do. Know?
You always
yeah.
miss stuff.
I thought it was great. I was happy with it winning. Near the end, or right when the Oscars started, I was kind of rooting for Jojo Rabbit. And I think because maybe it's recency bias because I had saw it, I saw it on Saturday. But that is a high wire act of a film to do it where it's the eyes of a young boy, young German boy in the Second World War, and his imaginary friend is Hitler. And he loves Hitler. It is comedic. It is very poignant. It is sad. It is all these things. I loved Jojo Rabbit.
So it was a really interesting, these things, it's almost like when teams win championships, you say, okay, well, what are the trends that are going to come out of this?
Yeah.
The mid-range art film had a good night.
Yeah.
Whether it was Jojo Rabbit or Parasite, the Epic did okay.
Yeah, 1917 didn't get a lot.
Right. But it was nominated.
Yeah, it was nominated for a bunch.
But the fact that it was a good night to be a smart comic book movie, which Joker is, even though it feels like it has nothing to do with comics, it is still a DC Universe production. I kind of, you liked Avengers more than I did.
Yeah.
I do feel like it deserved a little more love from the technical standpoint because it was pretty spectacular.
Oh, yeah. If you wanted to get... You know what's funny? I would have been fine if Avengers had won Best Film.
Oh,
it wasn't nominated, but I've been totally okay with that. If we're looking at it through, what is a movie and just all the technical that goes into it and the story in this movie about storytelling. And sometimes movies are supposed to be big epic.
Yeah, sometimes movies be moviein'.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes Moonlight wins, and sometimes I would be fine if Avengers won.
Right.
But overall, I was happy that Parasite won. Could have used more, a lot more movie stuff, more montages, that kind of thing. But overall, I thought it was a really good year for film. Like if Jojo Rabbit had won, great. Parasite won, I would have been happy. 1917, if it won, totally get it. Would have absolutely been on board. Like there was a lot of movies where I would have been fine if they had won.
And there's been a few years recently. It's like when people are saying like the English Premier League, this is the worst season ever. And that just happens sometimes.
Yeah.
We tend to, you threw out the word recency bias. We tend to come up with short sample scientific examples of why everything is bad all the time.
Yeah.
that was good. Mm-hmm. You know, let's enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like, there were some good movies made by some really interesting people. I didn't love Joaquin Phoenix's speech, except for when he said, I've been a scoundrel and I've been this and I've been that.
Yeah.
And people here gave me a second chance. And that's kind of what it's all about. You and I have talked about this idea of adaptation and evolution being what we're supposed to be into.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I liked that. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect to hear about cows being inseminated, but ultimately his point was well taken.
That's right. I forgot about that.
It was a bit weird.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't an elegant way to make his point.
Yeah. But I didn't think, did you really think there was going to be elegance? Like, when Joaquin Phoenix got up there, you're like, what's he going to say? Like, you know, I thought Brad Pitt's speech was great.
He won the night, and I think you and I have talked on the pod recently about him basically winning Hollywood at this point.
Yeah.
Like, if we were to do a
power ranking,
I think Brad Pitt's got to be number one. It was a second Oscar. Mm-hmm. What was the movie that he made under Plan B that won? Was it Moonlight? I think it was Moonlight.
I'd have to go back. Yeah. Or wasn't he involved in 12 Years a Slave?
That's the one.
Yes.
That's the one. Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah. But like this
was, and he looks great.
Oh, he looks fantastic. Like, I remember this was maybe almost a decade ago, but when that silent movie won Best Picture.
Yeah, it was The Artist.
The Artist. That was a horrible year for film.
Yeah.
There was nothing, there was no, like, it's so funny. Almost any of the movies that didn't win this year, if they were in it that year, they would have won it. You know, like in sports.
Yeah, like it's a bad draft year.
Yeah, a bad draft year, or when there's that great team, but they, you know, like the Patriots, when they went 18-1, you know, put them in a lot of other years, they'd probably win the Super Bowl. But yeah, bad draft year, like this year, it was a solid year all around for film. And, you know, I saw all of them except for Marriage Story. Marriage Story was the one I haven't seen yet.
Looked a little intense based on the clips.
Yeah. Yeah, it looked really intense.
I'm still recovering from watching Kramer versus Kramer with my recently separated father in sobbing in the theater as we watched it. Mm-hmm. Like, remember when movies were intense experiences?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Joker.
Yeah, you know what? I'm still stuck on how I feel about Joker. Mm. And I don't want the philosophical wrapping around it to influence how I see it as a movie. We've discussed this. I don't necessarily love those kinds of performances. To me, they're dunk contest performances. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it did what it was supposed to do. It was supposed to be bleak and challenging, and it was bleak and challenging.
It was.
Bradley Cooper produced it.
Did he?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I know.
I just find it interesting. Todd Phillips, you know, went from doing old school, you know, to doing Joker. That's range.
And you would agree with this, I think. I've heard you say this, but he said because the climate for comedy is so difficult right now, he doesn't even want to bother. He'd rather just make weird dramas.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can't play. I remember people got angry at him. Well, just, you know, make funny movies. Like, okay, listen, he doesn't want to do it. Like, do we need to comment on everyone's comments? You know?
Yeah.
it's so ridiculous. And that's when the daisy chain of hate starts. Someone says something, people get angry. So then people comment on the original thing. Then people comment on the comments, and then and it just goes around and around. How about this? Keep your opinion to yourself.
So I've worked on films.
Yes.
And I've worked on TV shows.
Yep.
And here in my experience is the biggest difference between the two. A TV show is about creating something that is sustainable over a length of time. Mm-hmm. You know, when they talk about it, they use the word the engine. What's the engine that keeps the show going forward? Like when you watch 30 Rock, episode 1 of season 3 is pretty much identical to episode 12 of season 3.
Yeah.
New things happen, but they happen in exactly the same way. Mm-hmm. What I love about movies is they're like these magical experiences that are not supposed to last. Like, it is so hard to make a movie because so much has to happen in such a small period of time that every single word and scene counts. There is no fat. It's like this remorseless eating machine, by the way. Shark reference?
Yeah.
What time?
About 21 minutes in.
It just makes babies and it eats and it swims, and that's about all it does.
Yeah. And that gets to that point about how hard it is. I was thinking about the Raptors, and this goes to movies. The Toronto Raptors, this season, they're Godfather Part 2.
Oh, okay.
Because We debate all the time, which is the better movie, one or two? Mm-hmm. They're both brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Part two got us a star in Robert De Niro. He won his first Oscar for that in 1975. This season is giving us Pascal Siakam, who just became an all-star for the first time ever. And I'm workshopping this as my opening thought.
Okay, well, let's do it. We'll workshop it together. Yeah. So the all-star thing doesn't really count because it's not high enough of an accolade. It would have to be like a best actor award would be the MVP.
Yeah.
I think would be the equivalent. But what you can say is that it's focused on rising stars.
Yeah.
New stars, new faces, right? Mm-hmm. That you had Brando, the Kawhi in the first one.
Yep.
And in this one,
you got De Niro,
right? And then that would make Kyle the Michael.
Would make him Michael, right? Yeah. And because think about this Raptors year. A lot of people are saying this year is more fun and more satisfying than last year. And last year they won the championship. You know, some people think Godfather 1's the better movie. Other people have it as Godfather 2. But we're witnessing history. Godfather 2, first sequel to win the Oscar for best film.
Right.
Never happened before. The Toronto Raptors have won 14 games in a row. No Toronto-based sports team has ever won 14 in a row. They're making history. And I always wonder, which one do people enjoy more?
Okay, and in the first one, then Brando and Kawhi, both of them former superstars that were coming off stretches of questions about whether or not they could continue.
Yeah.
And then wound up having brilliant performances that recatapulted them into the spotlight in a way that I don't even think the people who put the movie together could have expected.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So Kawhi and Marlon Brando as damaged goods / MVP performers.
Okay. I'm definitely stealing that. I'm definitely stealing that for my opening thought today.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was in the shower and I was thinking, oh, what's my opening thought? What do I want to do? And then I'm trying to think of something of the Oscars. And it sort of hit me because, you know, getting back to the Raptors, I mean, like Saturday night, I'm like, I don't even need you to win. I don't want you to win. Lose a game, please. Like you're all hurt. And Lowry's got whiplash. And oh my, is that the 905? Do you got the whole Raptors 905 in there?
Okay. So to truly make it a comparison, you need the one line that you can hang your hat on.
Mm.
And I think it would be this, that they're poised to become Godfather 2 because it's harder to repeat, just like it's harder for the sequel to be better than the original.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boom.
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 Nick Nurse's Francis Ford Coppola.
Masai's Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Yeah, he is.
And you lose key pieces along the way, like James Caan's in the first one, but he's not in the second one.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But then you gain new pieces.
Yeah. So is James Caan Danny Green?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. That's exactly who he is. And then Fredo would be Fred Van Vliet, who has a kind of a featured role in the first one.
Yeah. But right? He becomes more.
He kind of pops up at the end, sort of like Fred does in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But then in the second one, he's much more important.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. See, it's kind of a.
And are we going to turn on him or not at the end of the year?
Because he is an unrestricted free agent. And you know, Atlanta is going to offer him way too much money.
And remember what Michael says to his mother. He says, in order to protect your family, can you lose your family?
Mm-hmm.
So in order to protect the roster, can you lose Fred Van Vliet?
Oh, God.
Or as like Fred?
Yeah.
Fred Van Vliet? Fredo?
Yep.
Van Vliet?
This is so easy. This is like, it's almost a cheat code.
You know, when you don't decide, when you make the decision that it doesn't have to be good, you can do anything.
No, but this is going to be good. I'm going to script this all out and it's going to be my opening thought, but it gets to the point. Like, I think part of the reason why you start off by saying you're mad at the Leafs is something we've talked about all the time. You love what you see from the Raptors. And both those games were going on at the... Like, think about this.
I texted you that night drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Go back over your texts.
Oh.
Go back over your texts. Yeah. Let's read what I wrote you. In fact, I'll do it right now.
Yeah,
you probably don't even have it on your phone anymore, you son of a bitch.
What? You know, do I need you shaming me about my BlackBerry?
Yeah.
You
need somebody.
But think about, please, everyone shames me about the BlackBerry. I get it every moment. As the Leafs were only having one shot on net in the third period against Montreal, you know, the Raptors had all their bench guys in for like 8 minutes and they outscored the Brooklyn Nets. Mm-hmm. You know, and those things are almost going on simultaneously. Did you find the text?
No.
Yeah.
No. You know what? Sometimes when I send texts from my laptop,
uh-huh.
They don't appear on my phone.
Yeah.
So you would have it.
Yeah, I'm making fun of me with my with my. Well, I'll go look for mine. But
have you done Sea Giant and
I have and Jeff? Both. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
So let me just. I want to sing a song of praise to Terrence Davis II.
Oh
my golly! While you're looking this up, I don't know who he's going to turn into, but he kind of has a Fredo Van Vliet feel to him in that he should be a nobody. He carries himself like a somebody, and that belief seems to have turned him into a somebody. Mm-hmm. Like, I did not think at the beginning of the year that we can't do this without Terrence Davis playing well, but he's gone from nice surprise to indispensable.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting transition from fun surprise to we need you.
Right. Fun surprise to contributor, mm-hmm. which is where I feel he is now.
Yeah.
Playoffs will be a bit different. I don't know if he's going to be in that playoff rotation.
In a lot of ways, you hope he's not because it means the whole team would be healthy.
Yeah, and it means Norm's back.
Yeah.
But just even because you know sometimes guys have bad games, like he seems impervious to fear, mm-hmm. which is great. Chris Boucher, I still don't trust, even though I'm happy to see him develop into a piece.
Yeah.
But he feels like a rotation piece for the regular season and not the playoffs.
Yeah. Oh,
see,
yeah.
Terrence Davis could be a rotation piece for the playoffs if he keeps going.
He's a guy where, as you say, if other parts aren't working, having just a bad night, Nick Nurse can be comfortable maybe pulling a Norm Powell or someone a couple minutes earlier than he would expect and putting Davis in. Like, I feel the trust level is far higher now, excuse me, than what it would have been at the beginning of the year.
The fact that the Raptors have won 14 in a row, of course that's fun, and of course we love them. But the symbolism of the Saturday night losing of the lead for the Leafs in Montreal versus the hang on for dear life, execute exciting craziness by the Raptors, the symmetry was a little uncomfortable as a Toronto sports fan. It's why do I have to hate this one team?
Yeah.
And love this. Like, can't I love them both? But the Leafs just won't let it happen.
The Leafs are making it hard, and the Raptors, in their way, are making it hard for you to love the Maple Leafs. And of course, it's an imperfect, you know, it's not apples to apples. It's, you know, it's two different sports. It's hard to do the comparison, but
honestly, Serge is entering folk hero territory.
Oh, yeah.
He looked great.
Yeah.
He really did.
This is his best year. Like, he's better this year than he was last year.
It's amazing to me that you get a guy in his mid-30s with a lot of mileage on the dial play really, like, you know, right to the end of the finals and a lot of minutes and a lot of hard minutes. And he's come back and he's looked fresher and better.
Yeah, and it's his offensive game. You trust it more. You know, it's not like there were stretches.
That little floater from about 7 feet, it's money.
Yeah. You sent me one text.
Okay, what did I write?
You just wrote and the key is the time, 12:30 at night.
Okay.
Pod Monday morning, ?
Okay, that's all I wrote?
That's all you wrote. I remember going, look at Bob send me a text at 12:30 at night. I usually expect them more at 5:30 in the morning than 12:30 at night.
I thought I wrote you that said effing Leafs.
Nope.
Love the Rafts. Oh, I might have sent that to my buddy Ihor.
Who'd you send that?
Well, I don't know. That's the thing. All right, let me see what I sent Ihor. I think I sent him a lot. A lot of songs by Tool.
By the way, thrilling pod. Bob goes through his phone.
Yeah.
Part of it is with the Raptors is because they won it
Not Ihor. Son of a bitch. Who did I text?
Maybe you didn't text anyone. Did you think about that?
You talk for a bit. Now I need to know.
No. What? I'm the trained monkey? You know, just go off on a monologue? Like something that I could never do. But, you know, the problem is that because the Raptors won it last year, we are in the post-coital phase with that team, which is, you know, no matter what they do, we're kind of going to be satisfied. But then when they go out and do this, it makes it hard, you know, to love the Maple Leafs. Also, when you consider this stat that was thrown out there, since the All-Star break, the Leafs bottom forwards have only one goal. And get rid of empty netters. They only have one. They've only scored one goal. If you get rid of Matthews, the top two lines. So that's another thing. The contributions. The Raptors get it from everyone. The Leafs get it from no one right now.
I don't know who I sent this to.
No.
I'm having that terrible sort of...
You're going memento. You're going, you know, just your memory.
Do you ever write stuff down on your hand when you know you're going to be drinking?
No.
Maybe you should.
No, because that'd be a tell. You know, people would realize you're going to be getting, uh-oh.
You're the Kaiser Soze of the wine bar.
Yeah. You don't want anyone to know. You just,
no, you're good. You yeah. know what you're doing. Honestly, I've seen you, other than my wife and her family, you're the best scammer I know.
Is that a compliment?
Yes.
Okay.
It absolutely
well, you
is.
Put me in, you put me in the same relationship, you know, just below your family and your wife. I'll take it.
The Makowitzes are sincere, interesting, creative people, mm-hmm. but don't scam with us mm-hmm. because you always know what we're thinking. Our faces always show what we're thinking.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We are bad poker players.
Yeah.
If you want to know if we're angry, mm-hmm. you know how you know?
Yeah.
Look at us.
Yeah. Yeah, it is true. You don't have to read between the lines right. too much.
And I try.
Yeah.
That's the key is like, Matt, you are a blank canvas.
Yes.
If you don't want someone to know, they will never know.
You're not going to know.
Never know. Like, you are a vault.
Yeah.
I'd love you for it. It's amazing.
Yep.
And your ability to come up with self-protection, mm-hmm. like a quick scam, a white lie, you are the master of the white lie.
It's true. I'm, you know, honesty, much like cauliflower, it's fine in moderation. I remember when I was on my trip in Spain, and the driver was taking us all, like, was doing all these crazy moves, and everyone was nervous, and I just had a blank look on my face, mm-hmm. and then everyone commented on afterwards, and then at one point, someone made this huge social gaffe. I didn't say a thing. 2 hours later, I brought it up with the group, and they're like, oh my God, like just again, yeah, I kind of keep everything.
You compartmentalize.
In. Yeah, oh yeah. Oh, I'm a master at doing that.
I think the older I get, which seems to be more and more every day.
Weird how that happens.
The more I admire and think the ability to compartmentalize is the key to success in life. Mm-hmm. I think it makes you a happier person.
I would agree.
But even beyond that, there's probably a lot of ways to be happy. But like the standard definitions of success, good job, good relationships,
yeah,
yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Compartmentalization is the key.
Yep.
And I'm bad at it.
Yes, you are.
So I need to get better. This pod's been helping me. I've learned a lot about how to be a worse/better person from you.
Amy sometimes like just, she doesn't use the term emotional psycho, but...
Sociopath.
So yeah, because of my ability, I take almost nothing personal.
It's incredible.
Like it's there's only a couple people, like there's only a couple things here or there where it'll work. Otherwise, I'm just moving on.
You are so practical. It is all practicality. You just ask yourself, is this useful for me? And if the answer is no, you don't do it.
Yeah.
You know who else is like that?
Mm.
Nobody. Nobody else is like that.
All right. I'm going to keep the names out. But there was one time where there was a controversy when Bob and I were working together. We had an issue with one of our employees to the point where our boss got involved and we had to go to meetings, whereas my boss... It was Bob, it was me, and this other employee who had screwed up. And every time, Bob's like, okay, Matt, I've done way too much talking. I'm going to let you do the talking this time. And I'd be like, okay, done. And then we'd go in the meeting, and within 30 seconds, you know, like I would, you know, I've mentioned something, but again, my face is just emotionally blank, and you... Every time you said you weren't going to talk, and then 20 minutes later, you're still talking. And it's and the thing is, you had every right to do it. Like, every emotion, you absolutely had every right to feel it and to do your actions totally 100% defensible. But it was always funny because the lead up was, I'm not going to do this. And then during the meeting, you did it.
I even would say to you, Matt, don't let me do this.
Yeah.
But then I would just blow completely through those you would erect barriers, mm-hmm. and I would just drive right through them, like Dukes of Hazzard style.
Right through them. It's like Gene Wilder in Young Frankenstein, when he's like, whatever happens, do not, when he goes in with the monster. And he's like, whatever.
No matter how much I beg.
Yeah, do not open this door. And within 10 seconds, open this door.
For the love of God, open this door right now or I'll kill you.
Oh, God, it was so good.
Do you remember what he says to the monster when he finally realizes they won't let him out? He turns around, he looks at him, and he says, hello, handsome. And Peter Boyle as the monster goes, huh? Goes, yeah, you. Handsome.
Oh my God, I totally forgot about that. Now I've got to watch Young Frankenstein.
That's the best. Are you Frederick Frankenstein?
Mm. My favorite part of that as a kid was, you know, you didn't even touch, aren't you hungry? You didn't even touch your food. And then Gene Wilder, you know, smashes his hands in the food. Goes, there, I touched it. Are you happy? And
so
as a
good.
Kid, I use that line a lot.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Did you do it?
Oh yeah.
Good.
are usually around the vegetables. There, I touched it.
More harder to explain early pre-adolescent childhood sexual awakening crush. Mm. Bernadette Peters or Madeline Kahn?
Oh, man. So much of the audience is not the younger audience.
Google it. Yeah. Google it. For you, it's Hermione Granger. Mm. Whoever is out there listening, skeptical Billie Eilish millennial.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh, Bernadette Peters or it was Madeline Kahn.
Madeline Kahn or yeah. Bernadette Peters.
Yeah. It also shows you we just didn't have a lot to work with.
Are you kidding? I love them both.
I know, but what I'm saying is because there was no internet or a lot of TV channels to give you other options, you sort of had to... You were stuck on the island.
You know, I was watching my daughter not watching the Oscars last night.
Yeah.
As she said halfway through the show, do I have to keep watching the Emmys? And I thought, you know, she has no interest in this. But when I was her age, like that was when I started my fascination with movies. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about like Blazing Saddles, like how much I wanted to be Harvey Korman.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't weird to be a 10-year-old back in the day and want to be Harvey Korman.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Now, we are dating ourselves here.
Oh, this pod is now gone. It's
like
it's,
we're way off the rails.
Yeah, way off. My first Oscars I watched from beginning to end was Rain Man.
Like right. Where I so that would have been 86?
Like, 88. It was like 88, 89. Like I'd watched some of the Oscars before, but it was one of those 2 years where I watched it from beginning to end.
Yeah.
So I was around 12 or 13 years old when I would watch just beginning to end and loved every moment of it.
Okay, so my first Oscars was 1979, ooh, and I couldn't watch all of it, but I was obsessed with Peter Sellers, as a lot of 10-year-olds were.
Yep.
And he was up for being there that year. And I wanted him to win Best Actor so bad.
Yeah.
And I remembered thinking, like, it was so important to me, like running to the newspaper to the next day to say who won. And, you know, that year, actually, I asked my teacher, I think I've talked about this on the pod before, but I knew I was going to have the same teacher in grade 6 as I was in grade 5. And I asked her if I could do a history of Hollywood in the summer and give it to her as a project at the beginning of grade 6.
Nerd alert!
And I went to the library, mm-hmm, and I got out a ton of books on the history of Hollywood. And I called it Hooray for Hollywood.
Yeah.
And I basically did a like, and it was dozens of pages. Like it's probably like 40, 50 page like little book. Starting with the silence and going up. And it's funny because if you look at this thing now, like it drops off like at the Blues Brothers, mm-hmm, is like the last great movie in my opinion. But that's probably because it was done in 1980.
Yeah, exactly. You'd have had, well, 80, you would have had Star Wars. You would have had Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Mm-hmm.
You would have had, those two would have been out by then.
Blues Brothers was, you know, we could do a whole pod on the Blues Brothers. Actually, if you want to get someone talking about the Blues Brothers, you know who you get going? Mm. Strombo.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. With his religious upbringing.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Between the blues music and the religious stuff and the SNL stuff. Oh, yeah.
It hits all the notes.
So good. John Landis was on a heater, man. He was good.
If you go back and I did my book club on Friday and did it. It was called Wild and Crazy Guys. And it was about a lot of the original SNL characters and also other people like Steve Martin, just like all those guys in the mid 70s.
Al Franken
not mentioned in this, but like Chevy Chase, Martin Short, John Candy, Belushi, like just all those sorts of guys. One, it reminds you how hard, getting back to your earlier point, how hard it is to make a movie, how many years it takes, how different it looks when it's done. And two, some of those guys were just dicks. Like Chevy Chase, obviously the number one dickhead. John Belushi, incredibly hard to work with. And if you get rid of the name Bill Murray, and you just, if someone told you, oh yeah, there's this actor I work with, and you list all the things that he did, you'd be like, this guy's a bit of an asshole. But because he's lovable and he's damn talented, he gets away with it.
Like athletes that way too.
Yeah.
If you really, that's what I like to take it back to Joaquin Phoenix's speech. That's why I love that I've been a scoundrel and yeah, I've been hard to work with. And a lot of you people have given me another chance.
Yeah.
And I respect, one, the self-awareness. Two, the desire to try to be better.
We talk about reinvention all the time.
All the time.
Did you see the XFL?
I watched actually about 10 minutes. It was enjoyable. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I don't care.
Yeah.
It was just on in the background because it's Saturday afternoon or it's Sunday afternoon and there's football on.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fine.
It's 2 p.m. on a weekend is just, That's background. It's filler.
I couldn't watch Boston and Detroit mm-hmm. on the NHL on NBC. Like, I'm not watching any game with Detroit in it. Although it was 2-1 when I did flip by. I wonder if they won or didn't. But I don't care.
Yeah. I'm just... I am curious. The only thing I'm curious about is if it succeeds enough for, say, a couple of years, will the NFL take anything from it? Will it?
Do you mean take anything from it, like talent, or take anything like what they've learned?
What they've learned. You know what?
Well, how different is it now? Like, because before the idea was it was supposed to be a renegade version of football that was pure excitement and sizzle, and it probably was somewhere between Degeneration X and arena football.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't feel like that's the case now. I feel now the model is AAA baseball.
Yeah.
It's basically a weird and quirky version of the sport you love so much.
What they're trying to do is just give you the best parts. Like, they want to, they're reacting to this young, a younger generation. Unlike you and I on this podcast today, where it's go faster, the clock, you know, you've let the play clock is only 25 seconds. They want you to go for it on fourth down. If you do punt, they make it harder, you know, for coverage. It's like the CFL. They're trying to promote longer returns. And I do wonder if there's anything there, or even if it's not the NFL changes rules, but I wonder if some coaches look at what's going on in the XFL. And they change as coaches. Maybe they become more aggressive. Maybe they look at it and, you know, just try to find a way to speed up their own offenses.
I do think going to things like, you know, on an esoteric level, like game theory, mm-hmm. that there's a best version of the sport in that it has the right balance of action, the right balance of surprises, turns, twists. Like, there's a reason why, for example, a movie is between 90 minutes and 120 minutes.
Yeah.
Because just over time, it's been proven that this is the way the audience likes it best.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, as you tweak with the rules of a sport, like, there is a version where there's too much offense. Because now you've devalued the idea of scoring enough that when it happens,
yeah,
I don't care.
It's not a big deal.
Right? Like, you see this with the three-point shot. For a while, it was really exciting. You hit a three. Oh, my God. There's this charge coming. But now, you know, yeah. there's like 9 or 10 threes made a game.
It's
getting
10,
kind of boring.
15 or 20. You know, now it's,
I meant per team.
Yeah. Yeah, now it's James Harden, you know, taking 23-point attempts in a game.
You know, when I watch Trae Young and he's got his foot on the logo just jacking him up, mm-hmm. like, it's not fun, right?
Yeah.
So there is, like, this balance of comfort and surprise that's a sweet spot. But the weird thing is we can't stay there because now we're so worried about appealing to generations and their expectations are different. Like, it feels like every 10 years we're going to have to reevaluate what makes a sport work.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you can do that.
No.
Because I don't think the sweet spot is that movable.
I think
the games are what they are.
Yeah. I mean, I think, well, I think the NFL is in a great place right now in terms of just where the game is. And with the NFL, with football, it's always simple. You just break, it's as simple as this. Are there enough good quarterbacks?
Yeah.
If there's enough good quarterbacks, everything else will take care of itself.
Well, you know what the NFL is? The NFL is beachfront property mm-hmm. in the sense that it is premium.
Yep.
Everybody loves it.
Yep.
There's no reason to change it. Climate change around the corner. These things are all going to be wiped out. Yeah, yeah, I know. But we got at least 50 years before this thing's gone. It's the safest bet until it becomes completely untenable.
I look at the NFL. I think they've, like, all their main problem is just making sure the youth are playing. And at least they're doing everything they can, you know, in terms of, you know, you tackle later, you hit later, you've gotten rid of kickoffs. You've done as much as you, like, the only way you make NFL safer is if you just get rid of all hits.
And we would agree we want to keep kids safe, but it's funny how as fans that grew up with a tougher game, we actually quietly resent this. And this is where two things can be true in your head at the same time. As a parent, you don't want to put your kid in hockey
No. And
have them be, like, mangled out there. And then when these kids get to the NHL and they don't think that way, you're like, well, they're soft. Both things are held in your head as true,
yeah.
But you've kind of asked for it. Like, you want the game to not be savage so that kids will play.
But you want the game, you want a certain level of savage because we as human beings, we're attracted to savage. We're attracted to violence.
It's one of the reasons we like it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
As a Canadian, you know, we've got a hard-packed Protestant work ethic that allows us to enjoy, you know, really savage things in small portions. And then the rest of the time, we're totally, totally, like, you know, the hand ain't shaking, right? The gun hand ain't shaking.
Now you're going back to Blazing Saddles.
Blazing Saddles.
You're going back to Blazing Saddles there. Well, you know, it's like we don't we're fine with fighting being out of the game, but when Calgary, Edmonton, and goalie fights, we all loved it, and we all watched the video, and we all got a charge out of it.
I like fights. Mm-hmm. Now, and even when we were having these huge debates about fighting, and you and I were on the air, this was more me and Cebulski, because he was kind of a peacenik, and I was a bit of a hawk. Mm-hmm. I like fights. I always found them entertaining to watch.
Yeah.
There are people who are like, this is dumb, this is savage, and that didn't really bother me. But the truth is, I like boxing. I like UFC. I like watching people fight.
Yeah.
I think there's a place for that in the human psyche. But as you discover more and more that these people are, you know, being permanently damaged from less and less than you thought it took, it's hard to justify. And now you got the tricky spot of, well, do I need to justify it?
Yeah.
If you're willing to do it,
yeah.
Well, then why do I care?
Would you, what if CeCe wanted to get into UFC?
She does. No. This is the truth. Yeah. She loves to fight.
Yeah.
I'm teaching her to fight.
Yeah.
I'm teaching her to fight because I think it's good for a kid's confidence and maybe even especially a girl's confidence to feel like you can handle yourself. Mm-hmm. I feel like one of the ways in which we were raised that we don't do anymore is to have physical confidence. And part of that is fighting. And these things get manifested in different ways. This isn't like some, you know, life philosophy that I've thought out a lot. I'm just kind of winging it off my gut.
That's like most parents. You do a lot of winging it.
You know, when I remember getting into problems at school, and my parents took me to karate. And they took me to karate because they didn't want me to fight dirty. Mm-hmm. Because they thought that's where things go bad, right? They saw me taking a stick to school one day because some of the older kids were picking on me and my friends.
Yeah.
They actually looked out in the backyard and they saw me selecting a stick that I was planning to take to school to defend us. And they thought, well, we better put him in karate so he learns how to fight right. But not so he learns not to fight. They were proud that I was going to defend my friends.
Yeah. It would have been ironic if you go to karate and they teach you, you know, the bow staff. It's like, right. No, that's the one thing we didn't want. Put the thing right. That looks like a stick down.
That's really funny. Anyway, I guess my point about the thing with CeCe is like, my mom's philosophy is summed up. She got two key philosophies. One is shut up, lie down, and have a sandwich.
Yep, that's true.
And the other one is boom fast. She always says, do everything you can to avoid a fight. Mm-hmm. But if you have to be in one, throw first and throw hard.
Yeah.
Boom fast.
That's a good philosophy.
Honestly, she's right. Like, don't look for it.
Yeah.
Try to avoid it. Mm-hmm. But if it's coming after you and there's nothing you can do about it, sucker them. Hmm.
My philosophy was always more dirty. Just punch someone in the back of the head and then run away.
That's a good one. Yeah. That was very Woody Allen-esque what you just did. Yeah. Well, you've never been in a fight.
No, I've never been in a fight.
That's amazing to me.
Yeah.
I actually think like the way that kids hurt each other now is so much meaner than just shoving. Like, I feel that it's not good to have kids hit each other. Like, that's not a good thing. You'd rather everybody always gets along. But since that's not possible, what's the best case scenario?
One punch, I think, is better than some of the stuff on social media.
It's so mean, Matt.
Yeah.
Like, they're so mean. They gang up on each other. And there's these hive minds that just, like, single out kids and pick them off from the herd. And the ability and... You know, I don't know if this is especially girls or not. I grew up one way. My daughter hasn't really experienced this yet. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's always like, I remember, like, I'm not a fan of corporal punishment for kids. I don't think you should hit kids. Adults hitting kids, that's not, the power relationship is too skewed.
Yeah.
I don't believe in it. I don't do it. And it wasn't done to me. But that said, this idea that if we just punish our kids other ways, well, it's so much less cruel. I don't know if it's less cruel. It's just differently cruel. Like, it's really hard to know how to deal with the kids' emotions, right? The idea that you're going to yell at them and scream them and shame them and make them feel horrible at themselves. Well, that's bad too.
Yeah.
Oh, right? Yeah. Like, that's bad too. There's obviously a middle ground where you do things much better. But that's my point sort of about this bullying thing is, you know, just because kids aren't hitting each other doesn't mean that they're not damaging each other. They're pretty good at figuring out how to hurt each other.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it's just, you know, and Louis C.K. talked about in that one interview with Conan O'Brien, we said the problem with the phones and everything is that it destroys your empathy, you know.
It's a great point.
You know, if you, and his point was, if you call someone fat to their face,
And you see them cry.
You see them cry. Then you feel bad. Like, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. But when you type it and hit enter and you don't see the results of your actions, then it's like, oh, okay, well, that's fine. I can just keep doing stuff like that.
Modern warfare versus being in the trenches.
Right? Yeah. Well, we got to end this.
Are we ending it? Wow, we got really intense and philosophical here.
So well, we just ended with this thought. I think I'm now at the age where I'll never be in a fight. You know, I feel like, you know, like a physical fight. Like, I feel like once you've hit your 40s, it's probably not going to happen. It's like, I know I'm never going to go to a nightclub again. I feel like the odds are very slim, you know, that I would get into a fight.
Yeah, there's a certain point after which, like, it should probably never come up.
Yeah.
My last one, I was, and I wasn't really a brawler or anything, but my last one, I think I was like 23, 24.
Yeah,
I think after
25, it probably
And I didn't want it. Like, I got jumped. Mm-hmm. You know, I was at a bar, and there's always some guy who doesn't like the fact that you got a girlfriend or something, right? Yeah. There's always some bullshit. There's some idiot, you know, and because I used to play music, I was in the bars all the time, you know, so there's always some idiot who wants to prove something.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. After 25, if you're still fighting,
yeah,
the fuck,
yeah,
smarten up.
Yeah, 100%. But if I do get in a fight, I know I'm told just little jabs. Just keep your arms in.
Bridge of the nose, Matt.
What's that?
Bridge of the nose. Is that makes them tear up.
Oh,
and also a punch right in the mouth causes anguish.
Oh,
yeah. Although really, like throat and eyes.
What's that? You
can't beat throat, eyes, and groin.
Throat, eyes, and groin. And on that note, Bob, I'll see you next week.
The throat, eyes, and groin edition.
There you go.
Macko and Cause. See you, buddy.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.